This video is brought to you by The Corbett Report, 2009 Video Archive. Buy your copy today at corbettreport.com.
This is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com.
And this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and we'd like to welcome you back to another edition of New World Next Week. And it's a new year, so we're looking forward to a new year of stories to cover. And of course, you can keep track of all of the episodes of New World Next Week at newworldnextweek.com, where you can download this video podcast in all sorts of formats, including audio only, as well as all sorts of video formats. So please go to newworldnextweek.com to check that out, and newworldnextweek.blip.tv, where you can watch the episodes in a player. And we have all sorts of stories coming, and it's been a very hectic hiatus, so thank you to all of you for bearing with us during the hiatus. And now I guess we're ready to roll up our sleeves and get right back into it. So James, what do you have up for us first?
So we're going to begin with the economic situation with a story from lewrockwell.com with the very simple headline of Geithner says U.S. insolvent. The U.S. government is insolvent. Who says so? Timothy F. Geithner, the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. Geithner sent a letter to Congress on January 6th of this year, 2011, asking for the debt limit to be raised. If it is not raised, he warned, the U.S. will default on its debts. In his words, quote, "Never in our history has Congress failed to increase the debt limit when necessary. Failure to raise the limit would precipitate a default by the United States," end quote. He didn't say that the government will be inconvenienced. He didn't say that the government would be forced to muddle through by delaying payments, raising taxes, and cutting non-obligatory programs and services. He said the government will default. This means the government doesn't have enough cash to pay its obligations to the many and sundry persons to whom it owes cash unless Congress authorizes an issue of even more debt. Now, within this story, I have links to WallStreetPit.com and Bloomberg and Examiner and even to Treasury.gov, where you can read this letter for yourself, James.
That's right, and I suggest that people do that so that they can see that. But I think this is an interesting story because it's maybe more of that rhetoric that we saw back in 2008, when Henry Paulson went around telling everyone that if they didn't approve the bailout, that the world was going to end and the universe was going to explode. And of course, we know now that was just an excuse to get what is it, 28 trillion plus and counting, filtered through the back door and funneled into foreign banks and corporations. So we know that was a complete and outright lie, and we can guess that this is probably a lie because all the government would have to do if it was serious about actually fulfilling its obligations and not defaulting, well, maybe they could start by cutting programs. And of course, you have Ron Paul and others suggesting that if you cut the foreign military interventionism of the U.S. altogether, you could save $1 trillion a year right there. So again, this is, I think, just rhetoric that's being used to scare people in the face of what might actually be actual opposition from congressmen who may actually stop the debt limit from being raised. I'm not holding my breath for that, but I guess the political elite are at least afraid enough of it that they're going around trying to hype fear about this.
Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of articles of that fear-mongering, of saying very much what you just said, that the sky is going to fall if we don't raise the debt limit.
Right. So, and you'll notice Arthur Goolsbee, the appropriately named Skull and Bonesman in the administration, was one of those people, on, I think, on Meet the Press or something like that, saying that basically it's an insane idea and it's just stupid for people to even contemplate it.
Mm-hmm. One of the last couple of things I want to throw in here is of course, Tim Geithner has trouble paying his own taxes. And it also reminds me, coming here in Portland, Oregon, in just a few months as part of this Speakers of Oregon series, and I can provide this link for you, the one and only Paul Volcker will be in town talking about what we need to do to fix the economy, because he really knows, right?
Right.
So, James, let's move to our second story now. And what we're doing on this episode is we're going to hit each of my main sites. So we're going to jump to cyberspacewar.com right now for a story from eweek.com. White House calls for identity ecosystem to protect online users. The Obama administration is committed to reducing internet fraud by developing a comprehensive national online identity strategy, United States Commerce Secretary Gary Locke said on January 7th. Cybersecurity and digital identity was a, quote, national top priority, end quote, issue. Locke was joined by Howard Schmidt, the ex-Microsoft White House cybersecurity coordinator at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University, where they outlined the framework for a quote-unquote identity ecosystem, which will allow people to complete online transactions with confidence that their personal information was safe. Quote, we are not talking about a national ID card. We're not talking about government-controlled system, end quote, Locke says. And I do have two flashbacks to last June on cyberspacewar.com. White House prepping national internet identity authentication plan and cybersecurity measures would mandate government ID tokens to use the net. James?
Right. So this is an interesting story because if you go and look into what's being proposed, the way that they're proposing it, at least at this point, is not the national online ID that that we're all basically expecting to come at some point. But it's not that system. It's a system that supposedly would just be an opt-in system that if you wanted to, and it would be provided by a corporation or something, it would not be from the government, but it would be a way to access all of the sites that you log into and buy things from through one central point. But I think what's interesting about this is this very concept and this very idea is just another example of how big corporations and big business could not exist without the big stick of big government coming along and telling people how to do things and favoring certain corporations so that Facebook and Google and Amazon and big companies like that will obviously be part of this system, whereas small startups that aren't run by, you know, eugenicists who are well connected to the system won't be similarly favored. And it's just another example of how when the government comes along and sets up one of these systems, they can pick and choose which corporations become part of the system and which ones will not become part of the system and then thereby fail. But at any rate, it is just one step along on that road to the final implementation of an online ID from the government.
And that, you know, corporatism that you were just talking about, which is what Mussolini said is really fascism, it's all helped along by the fact of this revolving door between the private sector and the government. And I just mentioned Howard Schmidt, who, you know, ex-Microsoft, ex-Bush guy, is now a Obama guy and cyber guy. So it's that revolving door of you're in a government position, but then you'll go to work for a private industry who will then get the contracts and the no-bid situations, and it all rolls forward.
Unfortunately so. Very true.
So let's move to our third and final story this week, and we'll move to foodworldorder.com with a story from Washington's blog, EPA to reduce fluoride levels in water due to unwanted health effects. On January 7th, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, HHS and EPA, announced a reduction in allowable fluoride levels in drinking water, quoting from the press release from HHS and EPA. HHS proposed recommendation of 0.7 milligrams of fluoride per liter of water replaces the current recommended range of 0.7 to 1.2 milligrams. This updated recommendation is based on recent EPA and HHS scientific assessments to balance the benefits of preventing tooth decay while limiting any unwanted health effects. As the Associated Press notes, a scientific report 5 years ago said that people who consume a lifetime of too much fluoride, an amount over the EPA's limit of 4 milligrams, can lead to crippling bone abnormalities and brittleness. That and other research issued Friday, January 7th, by the EPA about health effects of fluoride are sure to re-energize groups that still oppose adding it to water supplies. So, James, once again, does it seem as though those crazy conspiracy theorists were right all along yet again?
Somehow it seems that way, doesn't it? Wow, surprise, surprise. But of course the government is talking about like dental fluorosis and other, I mean, of course that is a problem, but it's not
spots
the main concern. Right, exactly. I mean, it's not a big concern when we're talking about the big scheme of things, but obviously it is at least some indication that that the anti-fluoride activists are having a massive effect. And thankfully I'm not in a country that does this. In Japan, we don't have fluoridated water, but if I was in America, America, and the EPA was doing this, I would wonder if there's the possibility for legal action against them, because obviously if they're putting the maximum allowable level at a level that they then announce later on, oh, by the way, that was unsafe, so we're going to lower it. I mean, there must be some legal recourse for that, because this is not a laughing matter. I mean, there's a lot of very serious consequences from this, and anyone who's looked into the actual effects of what we call sodium fluoride in the water, but of course isn't sodium fluoride, it's fluorosilicic acid, which is a completely different beast with all sorts of different additives, little goodies inside there. So when you start looking at this and unraveling it, it's actually a pretty horrific situation. So this is a good sign, at least it's a step in the right direction, but I think it's only the beginning of the battle, really, and I think this only the people who are battling against this need to step up their efforts rather than relax.
That is an interesting note, and that makes me think that, you know, yeah, there have been no sort of fantastic film, you know, there's no Aaron Brockovich or Silkwood kind of films kind of exposing this and getting it out to folks on a broad level. But James, you did a full episode on fluoride, did you not?
I did indeed, and I talked to people like Paul Connett of the Fluoride Action Network at fluoridealert.org, which is an excellent resource, and I would really exhort people to go there because they've got a ton of resources on the actual effects of the fluoride in the water.
And we'll include links to that show in the show notes for this episode. So, James, as we draw it to a close, and those are our three main stories, we also want to mention, of course, what are kind of the big elephants in the room, that with our little bit of time off, there have been the stories about the mass animal die-offs, the story about John Wheeler ending up in a landfill in Delaware, and now we, of course, have the story of Gabrielle Giffords and another lone nut shooting event, and we also have, you know, White House workers dying in car fires in Arlington. A lot of bizarre and suspicious activity going on, so I feel that we should at least mention the fact that, yes, we are, of course, aware of those stories. I covered the animal/Wheeler story pretty extensively last week on the Media Monarchy podcast, and I'll, of course, cover the Giffords and all the other various stories coming up. So, James, I don't know if there's anything you want to throw in about those stories from your perspective in Japan.
Not in this format, anyway.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah, it's a big. Those are big stories to cover, but I'm glad you are covering them, and I hope people will tune into MediaMonarchy.com to check that out.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you, and by the way, thank you to everyone who's been waiting patiently during the Corbett Report hiatus, and I just want to let people know that I will be back with new podcasts starting this Sunday, and the new website redesign has been put up on my new servers, and I'm just ironing out the wrinkles before directing the domain over to it, so there might be a little bit of disruption of the website over the next couple of days. You might have some trouble accessing it, or something might happen, who knows, but at any rate, please bear with me, and we'll have a new website up pretty soon.
Excellent. So there may be the little growing pains, but hopefully and fortunately and with everybody's help out there, this will be another positive growth year 2011 for truly independent, non-commercial, non-corporate alternative media, James.
Let's make it happen. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.